This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
We're going to be returning education very simply back to the states where it belongs. And this is a very popular thing to do, but much more importantly, it's a common sense thing to do. And it's going to work. Absolutely, it's going to work. And I can tell you from dealing with the governors and others in the state, they want it so badly. They want to take their children back and really teach their children individually. Probably the cost will be half, and the education will be maybe many, many times better. So we look forward to this.
President Trump speaking about dismantling the Department of Education. And of course, we have a lot of instances of people locally who are very, very nervous about that. You have people who are in a situation where people who are, you know, in the education system here on the state side, people who are used to the status quo, Department of Education being there, and it goes away, and then they think everything is just going to go away. The number one thing I found is the amount of their word misinformation that gets put out right now by the teachers' unions to frighten people. It's a really dramatic way to try to push against this Trump administration on something that they campaigned on doing. Let's get to an expert guest on this. Jonathan Butcher joins us. He's a senior research fellow in education policy at the Heritage Foundation. Jonathan, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be with you.
Thank you so much for the time. I want to give you the opportunity to set up for us when the Department of Education goes away, what kind of services, what kind of provisions for our children in their education, what kind of things like that go away?
Well, we'll start with what's happening now and then what may happen in the years to come. Immediately, the president has said that essential services will continue. So the job of the agency to move money from the Treasury to states and local schools, it's going to continue. Title I, which is money for children in low-income areas, IDEA, which is money for children with disabilities, student loans, all of these things are going to continue. Now, what is happening, though, is a reduction in force. So they have cut the number of staff at the department in half. And they are now working on removing the different responsibilities and programs that are either ineffective or have long been slated for closure in various budget proposals by other Republican presidents. So this is a step towards making the agency have a smaller footprint, but including what the essential services are.
Yeah, I think that the number one thing that I hear being lobbed out into the conversation is the idea that, like, special education, the IDEA that you were talking about, services, that those will be no longer. People are concerned that if they have some sort of IEP or some sort of plan that is specific for their child that needs a few extra accommodations, that Donald Trump doesn't want that to exist. He's going to defund it. He's going to doge it. It's going to go away. Are you telling me that's not the case?
No, that is not the case. I mean, the president has said that that is an essential service that will continue. And look, remember, parents should think, who did they make their IEP with? They didn't make it with Washington. They made it with their local district. So why would the IEP go away? The money for their child with special needs, I mean, only a portion of that comes from the federal government through IDEA. The bulk of that still comes from state and local taxpayers, right? In fact, that's been a long complaint of families of children with special needs, is that IDEA is, quote, an unfunded mandate because they say Washington hasn't filled in the amount of money they said they would pay. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say Washington's doing a terrible job doing IDEA and it's an unfunded mandate, and then when it goes away, complain that, well, we wanted it there in the first place, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is going to stay, or it is going to be there. And again, you made your IEP with your local school, with your local school district. The services are provided by the local school. Yes, there is money that is coming from federal taxpayers. The president has said that that will continue. And at the Heritage Foundation, we would advocate for that to continue, right? I mean, we would advocate for programs for children with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not the same way. We don't believe it should come from a Department of Education, but those services can still be provided through Health and Human Services, and were at one time.
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest panic I see is posted from unions, the teachers' unions. They're very concerned about this maneuver. Is there a threat to the teachers' unions and the strength that they might have, the influence they might have in the education system right now, that they won't have if the DOE goes away?
Yeah, they filed a lawsuit, both the NEA and the AFT, just a few days ago. And they are claiming that the department will not be able to fulfill its obligations under statute. But that is exactly what the president has said will continue. So, you know, I don't think there's no grounds to say that the department won't keep carrying out its job, because, you know, it as of now, right, is still doing it. Yes, it is certainly the case that unions, the national offices, much easier for them to only have to go to the Department of Education to lobby for more money or to go to Congress, as opposed to the different states. So I think unions benefit from being able to advocate for special interests that are protected at one federal agency.
Jonathan, this is Ryan. Is there anything that we know for sure that will be, you know, the average parent, the average kid will notice after these changes?
Hopefully not. Look, much of what Washington does is make requirements of state departments of education and districts for reporting. I mean, that's what they create, right, is a set of rules and regulations that schools and state departments of education have to turn around and report to Washington. The spending is still there, again, under Title I, IDEA, et cetera. I think that what we will hopefully see in the long term, and this is what we're looking for, is for states and local districts to be able to make decisions about how they adopt policies without looking over their shoulder to see whether or not Washington's going to come and either take away their federal money or send some investigation about how they're operating. That's what we need to change.
We're speaking with Jonathan Butcher, the Senior Research Fellow in Education Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Now, we're here in St. Louis, but I live in the state of Illinois, and we're watching something that's been referred to as the Homeschool Act try to get pushed through by a supermajority of Democrats in the General Assembly. Of course, J.B. Pritzker, very happy to sign, you know, these over-regulatory measures into law should they get passed in the General Assembly. This particular act focuses heavily, among other things, on truancy. And it's there to implement a way for the state government to quickly check in on homeschoolers to make sure that they're doing the things they're supposed to be doing and making sure that the kids aren't, as you would say, truant. But I've talked with various areas around in the public school district. There's not really an emphasis on truancy in the public schools. And then you go to look at the proficiency rates for students in the state of Illinois specifically, and they're like 27 percentile of math proficiency, and 34% are proficient in English or reading. The numbers are so bad across the board in our education system right now. What happens to these states that aren't doing so hot on their own, and given all of the responsibility, because the DOE isn't there anymore to oversee this, what happens if you're in a state like Illinois and they're not doing a great job?
Well, to begin with, the issue of student absenteeism has only increased since COVID-19. And so for public school officials and so-called public school advocates to be worried about homeschoolers is quite remarkable, because they're having their own problems keeping kids in the classroom. So I think they should take care of that before they're concerned about families who are educating their children. I think that's an invasion of privacy among homeschool families. I would say as well that it wasn't Washington that was able to fix the problem either around student achievement before. So it's not going to happen come from Washington after. I mean, this is going to be an issue of families expressing their dissatisfaction with their local school and demanding that lawmakers give them more options than their assigned school. That is going to, what it's going to come down to is parents saying that they're willing to leave to give their child a better education when their assigned school is failing their child.
So let me ask you this, Jonathan. When it comes to school choice, we've seen area states across the country have worked to move towards school choice. Does bringing the education system back to be squarely focused on by the states, not the federal Department of Education, does putting it with the states provide a faster, more reasonable avenue for school choice to be implemented?
Well, it certainly does, but it also provides a quicker way to look for better ways to improve student achievement. Remember, these are 50 laboratories of democracy, and when you look at the latest reading results, you see in states like Louisiana and Mississippi that they have increased reading scores much faster than any other state in the U.S. So it's worth asking, what did they do, right? What were the policies they implemented? Well, they said if you're in third grade, you will not be moved on to the fourth grade unless you can demonstrate proficiency in reading. They said that they moved a focus onto what is known as the science of reading, which includes phonics, which is a big change because so many states have abandoned phonics in favor of progressive methods called whole word over the last 50 years. So, you know, this is what we need to be looking for. I mean, Washington wasn't able to do that. They couldn't convince states. In fact, if you look back at the Clinton administration and then the George W. Bush administration, there was a total flip from the whole word method over trying to do phonics. But then September 11th happened, and that sort of derailed a focus on education policy because of the administration had to focus on terrorism for the rest of, you know, the rest of George W. Bush's time there. But it's a great example of, we had evidence in front of us that a particular way of teaching reading wasn't working. Washington tried to insert money and compel states to change what they were doing, and it still didn't work, right? Mm-hmm. Not going to come from Washington. It's going to come from state lawmakers seeing what's happening in other states and knowing that parents are ready to up and move if they have to,
yeah,
right, to provide their child a better option.
So, Jonathan, last question for you before we let you go. The implementation of the dismantling of the Department of Education, does that require congressional approval to make official? And how quickly does that affect the education system in all 50 states?
Well, ultimately it will. I mean, there are parts that are, you know, in statute. Title I is an example, so is IDEA. I think there is authority that the secretary has both to make the department smaller, to close programs that are ineffective, and even share programs with other agencies or move certain programs to other agencies. And here's what's going to happen. We're going to see over the next couple of years a much smaller Department of Education that will be less involved in K-12, and people will start to realize they didn't need it in the first place. And so I believe that those members of Congress who are in line with the president's agenda, and frankly, in line with the idea that states are where education belongs, will create a path forward through a bill to close the agency. We have a model at the Heritage Foundation that they can follow. So I'm optimistic that lawmakers want the best for kids, and this is the best way to go.
Well, we're going to see the fruits of that labor, certainly. Jonathan Butcher, thank you for being with us today. It's an important topic. We're glad we could cover it with you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Jonathan Butcher is the Senior Research Fellow in Education Policy at the Heritage Foundation. I've said this before, I think, on the air, but I'm on Facebook groups with... I'm going to get kicked out. That's why I don't want to say it on the air.
Go ahead. Just
for some teacher union groups.
Don't let them know that it's you.
My name is Ryan Wiggins.
Yeah. You can kick me out.
Uh-huh. And I just see the stuff that they're sharing, and it's very sensational. And I see, you know, I a lot of times use their posts to ask questions of my guests.
That's good.
They say that this is going to happen. Is that going to happen? And they're like, this is not going to happen.
I see the same thing because I'm not in those groups.
Yeah,
but
you are.
I'm in
Ryan
that one.
Wiggins.
You can kick me out of that one, yeah. but the people that I am friends with on Facebook, some of them are, you know, not politically on the same side of the aisle. And this is one of the biggest topics that people are screaming about the most, that things are going to change. Everything is going to change. This and Social Security, that's what you hear the most. It's all going away. And you're like, I don't know that you've done really any real research here. And I don't get mad at them, but it does make me upset that they're out there saying this and people who are not informed are seeing it and thinking, oh, well, then that must be true. Because
well,
it's
they
not
probably
true.
Are part of the they saw someone else say it.
Right, right.
It's a telephone situation.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk to Congressman Mike Bost. When we return, we're going to talk to him about the Doge cuts. How is the spending and cutting going in Congress? Congressman Mike Bost is there. He can tell us. Also, we're going to talk to him about these town halls that we've seen. Some pretty strong red districts getting some rowdy town halls. I've heard from both sides of this, but let's hear from Congressman Bost on the town halls and what he thinks is going on. And if there's, maybe they have a point. Maybe the people who are coming who are angry, maybe they have a point. We'll talk to Congressman Mike Bost next. Now or never
kind. Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Please don't close until we want to leave it. You and I are flying on an airplane tonight. We're going somewhere.
I want to talk specifically about your district in Minnesota. You have over 7,000 federal workers. How have DOGE's cuts impacted your constituents thus far?
Well, so far, the two main impacts have been with the Veterans Administration, of course. Again, when we look at the memo that says they're targeting 80,000 cuts to the VA, there is no way that that doesn't impact health care to our nation's veterans. The other is USDA. We have local Farm Service Agency departments in my district where, look, my family farmers, they're making planning decisions right now. And the tariffs that the administration have gone back and forth, these across-the-board tariffs are already hurting them. And then they go to the office and their loan officers have been laid off. It's really been an impact. And again, you know, if it seems very incompetent, no one's arguing that we shouldn't look for waste, fraud, and abuse. But the way that the administration, Elon Musk, is going about this doesn't make any sense for my constituents.
So listening to Congresswoman Angie Craig there, she's a Democrat from Minnesota, say that no one's saying we shouldn't look for waste, fraud, and abuse. That's not true. It is not true that nobody is saying that. But she also said there that there's no way that cutting 80,000 employees from the VA isn't going to impact our veterans. Well, we just so happen to have our friend Congressman Mike Bost on with us, the United States Congressman in Illinois' 12th District. He also chairs the House Veterans Affairs Committee, and he's very in tune with everything that is going on. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Well, Annie, thank you for having me on. She is wrong on saying that it will I guarantee you, because I was with the secretary yesterday morning for breakfast, and with the chairman's position, let me tell you this: I've known the chairman or known the secretary for a long time, and he's a good friend, and he has made the statement that I make all the time, and that is, remember, the VA was created for the veterans, not the bureaucracy. And the VA has had an increase in staffing over the last 10 years, about one-third, grown by one-third, not counting the budget, that has grown by a lot more than that. And instead of getting problems cured, what we have is we have more people on wait lines, more people not receiving the quality service. Now, our people are trying, but we need to do some sensible cleaning the house. Now, about the 80,000 people, that number was calculated off of a leaked memo that was given to about 25 top officials at the VA, asking them to come to the table to look for trying to reduce back down to the 2019 level. And the reason it was put out there was so that these people wouldn't come up and say, oh, in my agency, we can only cut about two people. Because you know that's not true, okay? We have to make sure. Now, we will make sure that we provide and no veterans will lose their services. But here's how this lies go along. So for the first week, they told that there was going to be, that the word got out that 2,000 people were being laid off. First off, right after that, they, because those were the people that were on their probationary period. So we were just stopping the hiring process there. If they were docs or nurses or frontline workers, they weren't laid off. By the time it was said and done, everything was adjusted, about 500 were laid off. Now, here I want to put into perspective for your listeners. The amount of employees at the VA is 477,000. You can lose 500 people in a turnover with 477,000.
Yeah.
What we're wanting to do is, and that memo was sent out to those 25 people. Unfortunately, then it was discovered that 20 of those 25 leaked it to the press. And that's another problem. So there's, it looks like there's going to be about 20 people that we know are going to be laid off. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But the secretary, after meeting with him yesterday, he explained to the members that were before him exactly. And also, so you know this, just the other day, he had a breakfast with all of the veterans, especially the large ones, veteran service organizations, the Legion, the VFW, and they had concerns, but he also talked to them about those concerns, and they believe that what we're doing is headed in the right direction to stop waste, fraud, and abuse and not reduce the services. But right now, there's been games being played, and I'll give you an example. They found out in an email that was discovered from the previous administration that the DEPSEC, or so the second, there's two seconds in charge over there, from the Biden administration, basically told in an email to make sure that you didn't hit the easy button whenever people were requesting community care. Community care is law. It is law, and it was passed in the Mission Act. So these type games have been being played at VA, and the, as I said, it's our goal to make sure not only the VA, but this administration is working very hard that every agency is going to become leaner. And this isn't anything new. This happened under Bill Clinton, too. And what's wild is he had, you know what he had? He had a group, but it wasn't called DOJ. It was called something else.
Yeah.
But no, they didn't throw the same fit. But he riffed, and I mean riffed a bunch, if you go back and look at those numbers.
Yeah. You know, I think you said something really important, and it's a matter of perspective, but that the VA serves the is out there not to serve the bureaucracy that exists in the agency, but it's there to serve the veterans. And can the veterans be better served if you pare down the size and scope of what the VA is doing right now? I guess that's the task that is at hand, and you're finding out that maybe there is a little bit cutback that can be made.
There is a lot of things, and not only that, we're now, as I just told you, we're working with the veteran service organizations so that the people that they serve. I'm a member of the American Legion. I'm not a member of VFW because I don't qualify because I was not during a wartime situation. But each one of these organizations get the frontline comments from the veterans that the VA is serving. And if there's positive things, we want to hear about it. If there's negative things, and they're the people that are going to be able to get it to us. And believe me, there's always room for improvement.
Yeah.
Congressman Boss, this is Ryan.
All right.
Hi. Is there more of an appetite right now for cutting than ever? Because I know that this is something, like we just said, previous administrations have talked about doing this. But right. Now it's as if you have a little bit more license from the American people. Am I wrong?
I think that is exactly what has taken place. The voters were very clear. They wanted the border kept under control. They wanted illegals, criminals taken out of our country, returned to their home country of origin. They are really wanting to downsize government. They want government to be efficient. They want to be energy independent, and they want to be they want our enemies to fear us and our allies to trust us. And all of these things are happening at rocket speed, I'm telling you.
Yeah, rocket speed. No pun intended there when you're talking about Elon Musk. What do you make of the blowback? I don't know how well you know him. I don't know how many times you've been around him specifically. But what do you make of the man Elon Musk and what he's doing for his country in the midst of all of these other massive companies that he owns and are being under attack?
Right. Let me say first off that he is an advisor. And the woman you had on, the representative you had on a while ago,
Andy Craig,
giving way too much credit to Elon himself, because I guarantee you it is the secretaries and or Congress that is then following up by his suggestions, okay, on reducing the spending. He is, and his people are identifying them. So know but he's doing a good job of identifying. I'll just look at all he found in the U.S. aid. That was an agency that would tell the committees of oversight in Congress that they didn't have to tell them anything because they weren't established by Congress. This is the type of stuff that we're trying to get cleared up. And I'm going to tell you, you're going to see that we're going to reduce. Now, it'll be hard to pass it, but look, the Department of Education should go back to the states. It should go back to the states. Now, I am a little concerned if we're going to put block grant money and give it back to the state, because remember, I'm from Illinois, and I'm not sure they always handle their money the best.
Yeah.
But, you know, people, if you're from Texas, now you're pretty proud of that, I guess. But education was always supposed to be handled by the states. Remember, the department was only created. Now, are there still things that have to be done that are done by that department right now that need to be done by something else? Yeah, the distribution of the higher education dollars, Pell grants, those type things. And we can still have oversight of some committee on, you know, just our education numbers, a report card for our different states. But it doesn't have to be this huge bureaucracy that exists over there today. Now, the question is, because, you know, because it will take an act of Congress to shut it down, unfortunately, if we get it through the House with the Senate's 60 vote rule, can they get it out of the Senate? I don't know. But this is what the people were wanting us to do.
Yeah, that is. It was pretty clear going into this past election what this administration wanted to do, and they seem to be doing a lot of it. I know that there has been some national stories or stories from across the country of some town halls. And I think you've had a bit of a hyper town hall here recently. It seems very orchestrated. They want to get into these somewhat red districts and sure. Make a lot of noise. You've been doing politics long enough. What do you make of what's going on?
It's the same thing that happened in 2017 and during that time, of Trump's first time period. That's when the town halls really started going bad, and this is an organized group. It's really well organized at this time. Matter of fact, the 10 people who came in, the protesters that came in, where a meeting was supposed to be specifically about, and we directed it to dealing with the solar panels on prime farmland and to discuss that issue. There were people that maybe didn't agree with me, not the protesters, some other people who were, and they gave some really good input on making sure that the language says certain things to, you know, protect smaller farms and things like that. But we couldn't get a lot of that done because of the protesters coming in. And then whenever they were thrown, then about three of them were actually thrown out for specific reasons. I had a group of, high school girls that were FFA members. And one guy got real foul, and I told him he was done and he was going to leave. And then he cussed all the way out the door. we find out that half of them weren't from my district anyway, and then they made a mistake of leaving an agenda sheet on what they were supposed to do when they left.
Can I see that? I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I can get it to you.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. You know, I understand people, if you were a big supporter of Kamala Harris, you're probably not loving the world right now. I understand that you could be frustrated, and you have an obligation to listen to your constituents, certainly, Congressman Bost. But, how, when it's orchestrated like this, when they're not from your district, and I guess they're just trying to make it rowdy enough to make the headlines.
Yeah. And because, I've been involved with a state government and this government for over 30 plus years now at that level. And whether it was a county board meeting or whether it was state rep or whether it's here, yelling and screaming in somebody's face usually doesn't change their position.
No.
Sitting down, talking, and working through issues, that's what we do. And that's the sad thing is that's the people don't see quite often when we are actually disagreeing here in Congress to work on language to find that place where obviously you got to get a majority of the votes to move a piece of legislation. We do that. But it is so amazing with your social media. Matter of fact, that group, I watched them pick up their iPhones and then all of a sudden say, well, no, this says this. Well, I don't know if you know it or not. There's a whole lot of different, if you want to support an opinion, you can find it on social media.
Yeah.
And it is a case where their only option now is to be disruptive. But that then leads to, because remember when this protest was going on before, and the protests were outside of my office, it was one of those protesters that left Southern Illinois, came to D.C., and shot Steve Scalise and other members of the ball field.
Belleville. Yeah.
Yep.
You have to take it seriously. The last thing I want to ask you about, and we've been talking about this a little bit, and there's a lot of communication going on, with our chat that exists with our show every day, and they're talking a lot about Jasmine Crockett. And, when you're looking at decorum right now, I'm always kind of fascinated by, like, the gentle lady from Illinois or the gentleman from Missouri. Like, people don't talk like that anymore, but there seems to be a keyed, focused effort in Congress, in government, to try to keep the decorum at a certain level so that the business can get done. And that just doesn't seem the way of the Democrats right now.
Right. Let me tell you, the reason it is a decorum like that is it is actual the House rules. The House rules are less strict in the state legislature, but in the U.S. Congress, it is very, very clear. Matter of fact, there is, and I spend a lot of time in the chair, but for instance, if they actually say something bad towards the president, whichever president it's been, there is a script that is immediately handed to me. The members are reminded to not engage in personalities of the president, and then they can actually have their name if somebody moves like they did with Green to have a. Have them stricken and have them taken down, they can be censured. And so there are strict rules. Unfortunately, yes, we do see the other side blowing up and breaking those rules. But once they're out of the chamber, it even gets worse.
Yeah.
We had the same thing, I guess, with Corey when she was there. And Maxine Waters has been good at doing this for years. Mm-hmm. And Al Green, people saw that. So there is a list of people. We've had them on our side, too.
Sure.
But Joe Wilson was always famous for screaming out in Obama's speech, "You lied." And we still harass him about that because because he's not that type guy. He just let it go. But it has got steadily worse. And some of the districts encourage their people to be that way. And it's sad because we've still got the best government in the world. We really do. It needs to be a smaller government, but
Well, you're working on it. That's what we understand. Congressman Boss, thank you. Like I said, if I can see that agenda, I'd just really like to do that. That'd be fun. Send it to me. Thank you for coming on with us today. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Congressman Boss, Illinois' 12th District. Whoops.
We've got the greatest government in the world. We just want to see it a little smaller.
Yeah. Yes, we do. Quick break. When we come back, the YouTube live chat poll, haven't hammered this one too much today. Should Congress pass a law banning pharmaceutical commercials? Yes or no? This was going to be the poll question I had up in my mind yesterday, and then all the signal stuff started to blow up. So we asked the signal question yesterday. So I'm putting this one out here today. Is it across all types of entertainment?
You cannot avoid it.
I mean, it's definitely
everywhere.
A huge thing in news. So let's talk about that when we come back. What if it caused, you know, corporate media to just go kaput? Does that change your mind? Let us know what you think on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Should Congress pass a law banning pharmaceutical commercials? Yes or no? We'll be right back. Let's pretend we're Ryan just gave us the YouTube poll for today. Should Congress pass a law banning pharmaceutical commercials? This is definitely something that's being proposed by RFK Jr. He doesn't believe that you should be able to watch TV and have a commercial suggest to you what a pharmaceutical company thinks that maybe if you have said symptom, you should ask your doctor to write you a script for. When I have watched, you know, it seems like they've gotten more out of control over the course of years. Did you see the SNL bit with Shane Gillis for the prescription couple of beers?
Yeah, it was great.
It was so funny.
Yeah.
And basically it was like listing off symptoms that you might have, like, I don't know, like, I can't remember what they were, but he was just basically saying, maybe you need a couple of beers.
Yeah, it was criticizing your kid at the plate while he's taking a couple swings in the batting
cage. Yeah, or getting made fun of at the water cooler.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a lack of interest from your spouse at home or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And after a couple of beers, he walks up to the water cooler and he's the man.
He pants the guy. Yeah. And they're like, oh, man.
What's up, Cheryl? You're looking pretty good.
The end of it. Yeah, exactly. Beers. The end of it. He's like, and if that doesn't help, maybe you need a little bump.
Yeah.
A little bump. That's right. Yeah. Basically cocaine. But it's a mockery of what we see every day. We've got commercials on right now, and I haven't seen one yet for something that is pharmaceutical, so to speak. A lot of supplements. And I don't know if supplements are different.
They are.
I mean, I would think they're not. Sometimes they're like, it's always like not FDA approved.
Right.
But it's just different to me in my mind. To go to your doctor and say, you know, I've been experiencing some lethargy and my mood is off. I think you should write me this prescription.
I need a little bump.
The doctor's like, I got just the thing.
You know, that wasn't real, right?
I don't really know how to say that they should exist. They don't need to exist. I can't tell you how many times. Well, I can't tell you how many times, but the frustration that I've had when I was pregnant, because I was just awfully nauseous, vomiting by the fourth kid every morning and every evening. It just was a part of the day. The sun came up, I was throwing up. The sun went down, I was throwing up. If I was hungry, I was throwing up. If I got cold, I would throw up. And there was a prescription that really helped me. And I tried a whole bunch of things. There are different, like, Zofran is one of them that you can try. It didn't help me. It made me super, super sleepy. I was sleepy already. They want you to try basically, like, whatever's in Benadryl along with a combination with something else. There were three different things that they wanted me to try before I could take this. Diclegis was the name of the medicine that actually made me not. It made me livable. Like, I could go to work because I took this stuff. And it wasn't available until I had Evelyn, who is my third. And then come the fourth child, I'm having the exact same experiences again. And my doctor's like, here, this is what worked for you last time. Just take this. And the insurance company said, no, you've got to try all of these things before we approve that. And I'm like, I need it.
Yeah,
I know it works.
That's common.
I don't want to go through steps A, B, and C when I know I need step D because I've already done this and I already know what works and I know what doesn't work. Please, I need relief now. My doctor is saying, I know her. This is what she needs. Please make sure that you take care of her. And the insurance company's like, nope.
Yeah, we're the insurance company. We're your doctor now. That's basically what they're saying when they do that. That makes me so mad.
It's infuriating.
Yes.
And so you put the insurance companies in the process of your health care. And of course you have television. Here's Tremfya. Is that? No. Is that Tremfya? No,
that's Tremfya glucosamine clavum clavum.
please.
That's
please,
the official Latin name.
Please go ask your doctor
the
for
Latin
that.
Name. Yeah.
Please go ask your doctor for that and then take whatever he gives you.
I'll just use the official name, not the popular name, Tremfya.
I mean,
because I don't care whether it's the brand.
Isn't it outrageous, though? I mean, how many things factor in to your health care that have nothing to do with your body?
No. That machine is so big. I'm so glad somebody's even willing to take it on.
You have cystic fibrosis.
Yeah.
Brad, you've got heart condition.
Yeah.
You've had multiple heart attacks. So my experience in the medical field, outside of a couple of emergency surgeries for like an appendectomy and something else, it's pretty minimal. I don't have like outside of pregnancy medical anything. You guys deal with this on a regular basis. Do you see that in what you have to deal with regularly with CF?
Well, CF is odd because it's so specific and affects such a small portion of people that when the doctor says this is what he needs, the insurance goes, okay, because they don't have a lot of ability to jockey with you.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of drugs for it. You know, you have it and that's it. But yes, I mean, having to deal with insurance constantly, mm-hmm. constantly. I mean, it's almost a part-time
job.
They
make me crazy.
They drive me crazy. They're terrible, heartless corporations that do not care about you at all. And so when people get upset with them, I understand. I mean,
I always assume that if I run for office one day, the phone calls I've had with my insurance company are going to be made public. Like, I remember one time I was like, I am pregnant and I am miserable and I need to stop being miserable. I can't live like this. And they're like, you just need to take these other medicines first.
Yeah.
I'm like, why would I be putting other medications in my body while I'm carrying a child that don't need to be put into my body when I know that they're not going to work? And my doctor, who knows me, says, this is what she needs. And they don't care.
But
they don't care.
The thing is, they do have to make money. So that gets lost in the conversation, too, that this is an industry and it has to make money. And so a lot of great pharmaceuticals have come out that have benefited me personally mm-hmm. because that industry exists. So I'm not saying that everything about it is pure evil.
It's just upside down.
It's just way out of whack.
It's wild to get the phone call from your insurance company. Like, would you like to talk to one of our doctors over the phone so we can make sure you're getting the correct stuff?
No, and I'd like to kick him in the nuts.
Yeah.
I'll just take the word of my doctor. Who actually went into my heart and fixed it over what your doctor on the phone said.
Yeah.
So.
It's crazy. I mean, that's like more of an insurance complaint than it is
pharmaceutical
commercials.
Yeah, we kind of got off the topic there. But
I could go all day on this. Go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and vote. Let us know what you think.